Today's episode of A Novel Podcast is sponsored by Audible, and several of the books we're discussing today are available on audible.com, as well as thousands of other titles. A Novel Podcast listeners can get a free trial of the Audible service by going to audibletrial.com/anovelpodcast. You're listening to A Novel Podcast, in-depth discussions of literature from all genres and generations. I'm your host, Russell. I'm actually joined by no other co-host today. We've run into some minor snags, technical and otherwise. And I have no co-hosts for today, so it's going to be just you and I, which is fine with me. I wanted to talk to you today about actually three different books that all kind of share some similar themes. The first of which is The Ritual, 2011 British novel by Adam Neville. The Ruins, a 2006 novel by American author Scott Smith. And lastly is the 1999 novel, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, by Stephen King. Now, I will warn you that in each of these books, there will be spoilers. I will try to keep them to a minimum. I'll also warn you that it has been many years since I actually read The Ruins, and many years since I read The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. The thing that kind of keeps these three books all together are just a few common themes, really, that they have together. They're all about characters who are lost in the woods, and they're all about characters who are being hunted by something. All of the characters have to survive off nature. A lot of the books have group relations and survival situations in common. And just for kicks, I googled the terms novels about people who are lost in the woods, and these three came up as numbers 2, 4, and 10 on a Goodreads list of the best wilderness horror stories. So, in general, I find that these novels tend to, not these particular novels, but novels like these, horror novels or anything about, let's just say like, you know, The Walking Dead, anything about survival, I find that they tend to ramp up very quickly. You have characters who are in relative safety towards the beginning, and then something happens, something catastrophic of some kind. And then all of a sudden, these characters are in extreme danger. There's not a build to this. I find that too often the jump in the threat to the characters is huge. These novels, on the other hand, a few of them really do. There are points where the threat is a nice, slow, steady build. In particular, I would say The Ritual, the build is nice and slow and steady. These novels do tend to introduce the danger and kind of debilitate the characters in more interesting ways. Now, personally, I find it much scarier, because these are all horror novels. I find this much scarier when the characters are still within reach of safety. You know, typically in the beginning of some kind of a horror novel like this, what you'll have is characters who are in safety. They're completely safe. Everything's kind of normal, routine, and then something tends to happen. And that something can sometimes make things a little bit worse, and then after a while, it tends to make things a lot worse. You know, for example, the character might choose, oh, well, we're going to be driving someplace we've never driven before. And as they're moving along, well, okay, this looks a little weird. I could turn around now, but there's absolutely no reason to. Things are just a little weird. Something off-putting happened. And then maybe one or two more little off-putting things happen, and they say, well, this is really weird. If I was to play it really safe, I would just completely turn around and go home right now. That, to me, is the scariest moment, is when there's something in the character, some flaw that they have, a greed, a laziness, selfishness, ignorance, something that is preventing them from playing it safe, some reason why. And if you ever saw the movie Cloverfield, what made that movie interesting to me was the fact that the main character, his goal was to get to his girlfriend. His goal was not to run away to safety, because there's 1.5 million different ways you could run away to safety. His goal was to run into danger. His role was to get towards the monster, because that's where his girlfriend was. There's some examples of both of those parallels in some of these books. So we'll start by talking about The Ruins. Now, The Ruins was a very interesting idea. I found that anyway. The basic concept is you have these group of college kids who are on spring break, and they're in Mexico, so they decide that they're going to go. And they meet a character who tells them about these new ruins that have his cousin or something has been exploring. So they go out to that area, and there's a little, you know, bits and pieces of warning along the way. The character that they meet, if I'm recalling correctly, the character that they meet who tells them about the ruins is not completely reputable. And then the guide that they get to drive them out there says, "No, this place is no good. You don't want to go here. Come on, I'll take you someplace a whole lot better." And he seems pretty emphatic to say, no, don't go this way. They get out to the ruins, and there are characters who are literally saying, "Stop, don't move, step back, come closer to us." And they just, for whatever reason, don't listen. And they get on, and as soon as they take one step too far, well, all of a sudden everything changes. And now, okay, that's it. You're not moving a muscle. All these locals are pointing weapons at them and saying, "Step back, step back, step back, get away. You are not, you're stuck," essentially. So they find themselves on this hill that is covered in vines, and strange stuff starts happening. Essentially, they're pretty much being trapped there by the natives. They find the character, I can't remember any of the names, I'm sorry, but the character who invited them to come along finds his brother, his cousin, something to those effect, dead at the campsite, and the campsite's still there. So now you've got these, you know, six or so people who are stuck. They were only supposed to be there for a day. They don't have a lot of supplies. So water becomes an issue. Food becomes an issue. Escape becomes an issue. And the basic crux of the story is it's not just them on this hill. And there's natives, locals all around the hill watching them and pointing weapons, bow and arrow, rifles, I'm not exactly sure what. But as if they were to come entirely too close to the edge of the ruins, then the ruins are surrounded by this swath of land that is salted. I imagine that it must be, 16 feet thick? What's the word there? I'm not exactly sure. But 16 feet of land circling this. And that's a guess. I have no idea. So it's suspicious to begin with, but if the characters were to come down close, people who are stuck inside the ruins were to come close, they'd be threatened by the locals. You have to stay where you are. You're not getting out. So, well, come on, help me. I want to go home. Nope, you're stuck. We warned you. So while they're up on the hill, they see inside the ruins of this temple of some such. They hear a cell phone ringing. They go in after it. Somebody gets hurt. The vines have this sticky resin sap that is very acidic and will hurt them. Strange things start happening. They see birds, so they're trying to capture some of the birds, and turns out it's not birds. It was like the vines making this imitation of birds to lure them places. They believe that the cell phone ringing wasn't actually a cell phone. They believe the cell phone was the vine creature trying to get them. And ultimately, it's creepy up to a point. It's scary and it's tense when they're first in there, when they're first stuck on the ruins and they can't get out. And then it just becomes kind of grotesque and obnoxious. Frankly, I didn't really particularly care for it. I can't speak too much to the specifics about it that I didn't like. I won't give away the ending, but I'll tell you that I found it extremely unsatisfying. As it becomes increasingly apparent that escape is not going to be possible, the ending becomes a little more and more, you know, as you get to the point where it's like, well, what are they going to do in order to escape this situation? You start to think, well, I can't think of a single thing that they would do to escape this situation. And anything that they could come up with is either going to be extraordinarily impressive or more likely really lame. And I tend to think it fell on the latter of those two. Now, I'll tell you, there's one person who actually disagreed with me quite a bit, and that's Stephen King. So for Entertainment Weekly, he made a comment that was quoted here. He called it the book of the summer. It would be The Ruins by Scott Smith. Last heard from in 1993, A Simple Plan, which was later filmed by Sam Raimi from Smith's script. No quietly building Ruth Rendell-style suspense here. Smith intends to scare the bejabbers out of you, and he succeeds. There's no chapters, no cutaway. The Ruins is your basic long scream of horror. It does for Mexican vacations what Jaws did for New England beaches in 1975. And, well, I will tell you, yes, that is definitely true. There is no long building suspense. It's just, you're kind of creeped out just a little bit. Things are a little off-putting. And then, whoa, okay, now we're stuck. What are we going to do? It's kind of scary for maybe 20, 30, 40 pages. And now, okay, they're still in these ruins doing the same thing over and over and over again. They're just getting thirstier and hungrier, and they're losing patience, and they're starting to freak out. Frankly, I didn't particularly care for it at all, especially the ending. I did not feel like the ending saved it in the least. So let's go ahead and take us to the next story here, which is the novel, King's novel, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. Now, this very similar in that it's about somebody who is lost in the wilderness, no way of getting away. But in this case, it's about a single girl, 14 years of age, if I were to guess, if I remember correctly. So all by herself, very little to eat. And she's not lost any place that is unfamiliar to her. She and her mother and her brother were going hiking, and her mother and brother were arguing. So she kind of backs away and tries to get away so they don't have to hear what they're saying, and she's on the path, and then she decides, well, I gotta go urinate. I'm gonna go do that, you know, way out in the woods, and just from that alone, decides, oh, I'm gonna go take a shortcut to catch up to them, and then gets completely lost after taking a little tumble down a hill. It is much more psychological than the other two. There is a creature that is hunting her, but that creature is not necessarily corporeal or real. It's interesting. I won't give away what actually happens, but I will tell you that you know, she does have these visions about what's going on, and it's rather a nice build, unlike with The Ruins, where it just abruptly hits you. And I find that ironic that King would say, oh, this is not any kind of a, you know, building suspense. This one builds a little bit, and there is a little jump in the middle, but I found the jump to be rather poignant and satisfying. Now, the whole point of the story here is it's the girl who loved Tom Gordon. Tom Gordon is a pitcher for, oh, I'm embarrassing myself with my lack of sports knowledge here, Red Sox? I'm assuming it must be, but I don't know that for a fact. And one of the objects that this girl brought with her is a portable radio. So for the first few nights that she's out spending the night in the wilderness, she's out there for many days. First few nights, she listens to Red Sox games and uses that to kind of keep her hopes up. And is the, it really is the crux of the story, is how much she really loves this pitcher. Pitcher also helps her. One of the thing that her mother and brother were arguing about was her father. And her father was also a big Red Sox fan. And so she's using the listening to the Red Sox games on the radio as a way of kind of healing her home life, giving her hope to pull through, reconnecting her with her father, and then ultimately using her love for Tom Gordon to battle against this creature that may or may not be stalking her. It's very interesting, but of course along the way she's getting thirsty, she's drinking from ponds that are making her sick, she's getting completely lost, running out of food, dealing with you know, swarms of insects, and everything. There's very, very little supernatural about it, but there's enough supernatural stuff there to really just kind of string you along and make you go, okay, this could be more than meets the eye, or it might not be. And as I say, she's out there by herself, so it's very psychological from that point of view. There's parts of this that reminded me a lot of the movie The Village. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. And if you recall, at the end of The Village, and I won't give anything super spoilers away, but I will tell you at the end of The Village, There's a scene, of course, where the blind girl has to travel a road. And if you want to go completely fresh, stop listening now for about, I don't know, 30 seconds or so. But there is a scene where the blind girl has to travel through the woods that you're not supposed to travel through. And you, the viewer of the movie, can see what's happening around her. And it's frightening. And you're not sure if it's actually happening or if it's in her imagination, because, of course, she's blind. And so I found some nice similarities there between the themes of, is this really happening? Or is the girl who loved Tom Gordon, is she hallucinating? Ultimately, though, the girl who loved Tom Gordon was very good. It was not an extreme terror thrill ride. It was not Salem's Lot. But it was quite entertaining, especially if you happen to like Lost in Wilderness type horror novels. And that brings me to The Ritual. The Ritual is the one that I have read most recently. And this one is my favorite of the three by a wide margin. So Ritual is about these four gentlemen who were college buddies 10-15 years ago and have kept in touch and stayed, for the most part, good friends throughout. But, of course, life is getting in the way. Their careers, their families is getting in the way of them all. And, of course, geographic location. They don't live really close to each other. It's all getting in the way of their friendship. So they decide, all right, you know, we got to go out and we got to have a big group outing together. We need to spend some more time together. So they decide they're going to go camping. And they're moving this medium intensity hike through the woods over 3 or 4 days, something that any normal athletic person should be able to tackle without too much difficulty. But unfortunately, two of the gentlemen on the trip with them are not even the least bit athletic, and one of them sprains his ankle very early on in the book. So the two who are athletic are talking with each other towards the beginning and saying, I don't know if he's going to be able to make it. Well, look, if we just cut through this little swatch of woods here, maybe a 10-kilometer hike, we're going to cut 2-day journey off of our 4-day trip, and then we'll be able to just loop right back around home, and we'll spend a couple of days just camping at the campsite. It won't be as adventurous, but it'll be just as much fun, and he gets to be off his leg. Unfortunately, that little 10-kilometer jaunt there is through completely virgin forest, and they don't precisely get lost. I mean, they know where they are, but the underbrush is so thick that it's leading them in directions that they don't want to go, and it's taking them a lot longer to walk this path than they expected it would. You know, this 10-kilometer journey is turning into a 25-kilometer journey that is taking them, rather than a day or two to complete, it's taking them through 4 days. And after the first day, they've hardly gone a quarter of the distance that they need to go. And then something starts happening. They see some things that are unsettling. I may spoil this for you. So if you really want to go in fresh, just stop listening. But I don't want to give away every single little aspect of it in case you haven't listened to it. I did listen to it on audio, in case you have not read this book. It is the best, nice, slow build to intensity that I have heard, read in quite a while. It does not hit you over the head as soon as they're in the woods. There is a feeling of potential safety there. You know, after 1 day hike, they could just turn around and go back the way they came, and it would be really, really difficult, but they would know which way to go. But they decide to press on. And at some point, they keep saying, well, if we turn around, we might not make it. But if we go forward, we might not make it either. They put themselves in some extreme peril. But then it's not just the woods that's coming after them. There is something in there. And you look at the title, The Ritual, and halfway through this novel, you're thinking, what is this ritual? What is going to happen? They're out in the woods all by themselves. What, there's got to be like some kind of a religious cult or a lost society still living in this wood. They're going to meet. You know, animals don't have rituals, and this thing that is hunting them is either some kind of a spiritualistic demon, or it is some animalistic species that is such extreme viciousness that it's unseen by any creature you can imagine ever seeing in any kind of zoo or a nature documentary. There's a really great scene that really kind of solidifies this towards the very beginning of the book. It's their first night in the woods. They're supposed to already have been out of these woods, and they're hardly halfway through. And they come across this house way out in the middle of nowhere. Looks like it's been abandoned for decades, if not longer. And they're in the house, and what they encounter inside the house is written in such a way that it's completely interpretable to a certain point. And then when you find out what it actually is, it is almost as scary as anything that you could have imagined. And here, early on in the book, you're supposed to encounter things that, in your imagination, could be horribly terrifying, but then you get this relative safety, this kind of ease. I've even heard of, you know, video games that kind of... Super Mario Brothers is supposed to do the same thing. There's supposed to be heightened moments of tension followed by a little bit of ease, and then you keep ratcheting it up and release. Pressure release, pressure release, pressure release, ratcheting up and getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And that is exactly what that scene... This book does it over and over and over again, but that scene in particular... I mean, I was almost scared. It was so early on in the novel, I was almost scared that they had already encountered something that was going to completely destroy the tension and just turn it into, oh, now it's just a monster flick and they're all, there's no way they're going to survive. It's definitely not perfect in that regard. There are some extreme jumps, and at some point you think there's just absolutely no way that they're going to be able to make this journey. And the only way to end, there's several points throughout the novel where I say to myself, the only logical conclusion to this novel is that everybody's going to die. And he turns it around and he manages to prevent that from happening in a fairly interesting way. But I will warn you that about halfway through the book, there's an abrupt change in style. And the change in style is, it's okay. There's about 100 or so odd pages, maybe 150. That are kind of boring, kind of forgettable. They're there for a reason, but it's not nearly as entertaining as the rest of the book. But then, they're there for a reason, and when you get to that reason, it is interesting. And what happens in the end, the very end of the book, is pretty interesting and pretty scary, but nothing compares to that slow build and intense, oh my goodness, what the heck are we going to do moments of the beginning of this book. The beginning of this book's top 10 scariest written books I've ever seen. And this one, I did not even listen to it on audio. I just picked it up on a whim from the library and started reading. And normally a book like that would take me months to get through. It took me about 4 days to get through the first 250 pages. Took me quite a bit longer to get through the rest because that's when it changes. But for me, to get through 250 pages in about 4 days is fantastic. I am not a fast reader by any stretch of the imagination. So again, we're seeing a lot of the themes of man versus nature. We're also seeing more, unlike Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, we of course have groups here. And the interesting thing about this group is this is a group that has a history. So it's kind of like Lost, in the way that you meet these characters and you know that some of them know each other in certain ways. Of course, the four from the ritual all know each other very well, but you don't know how well or in what way. And it all kind of comes out. And as they're wandering through these woods, conversation leads in certain ways and you learn aspects of the characters that kind of explains how they're interpreting and how they're handling what's actually happening here. Which leads me to the conclusion and makes me ask, what is the significance of the one who survives? So, spoiler, the novel, not everybody dies. There's only one of the characters who manages to live, and all the other characters die. And what is the significance of this guy who made it out? And I'll just tell you who it was. So, warning, if you don't want to know, you're going to find out if you read the book anyway. It's Luke. Luke manages to make it out. And the question is, what is it about Luke that made him the one to survive? From a practical standpoint, you can argue that it's luck, because he and Hutch had an equal chance of making it on their own, but the creature seemed to be destroying wantonly, not picking his victims for any particular reason. Or perhaps the creature was picking his victims for a reason, and that reason is probably very similar to the literary reason about why Luke is the one who survived. So I'd like to read you a quote I read here from Nathaniel Katz from the Hat Rack blog. Quote is, "Luke is at home here, in the struggle of life and death. But he's nothing else. Ability with no help for a better life. As he says, it's the other world that I can't cope with. I'm useless. I'm hopeless in it." So, Luke of the four seems to be the least successful. You find out that the reason that they chose camping is because it's about the only thing that Luke could afford to do, and it was even a real stretch for him to be able to afford that to begin with. He just works as a clerk at a record store. That's his career. The others have lots of money, big houses, trophy wives, but you find out that their marriages are destroyed, and that several of them, they have a lot of money, or it would appear so, but they don't actually have nice big bank accounts. So Luke is the one to make it out because he survives in this world, but if he's surviving in this world, it's only because he doesn't survive at home. But he acknowledges that, unlike the others, who don't survive at home, but don't survive out here either. Is that the thing? Is it that Luke's a survivor? Is it that Luke isn't at home in society? And again, this story brings out relationships in survival situations. It deals with that a lot. It deals a lot with people being on short fuses. And it's done in an interesting way. I can't quite explain it, but there's an insight and a maturity to the immaturity that you see. You know, when you get on a short fuse because you're dehydrated and you're tired and you're in pain and you're hungry and you're on a short fuse for those reasons, you can somehow manage to step away from the situation, examine what you've done, and you realize, boy, I'm just being an ass here. I'm sorry. This is why I just lost my temper. Whereas with these college students, they're just being dumb. And again, I haven't read The Ruins in a long time, but I just frankly didn't like it. So I may be missing something there. But with the ritual, these characters, they have a maturity to them that, yes, I'm on a short fuse. Obviously, you know why. We're all on the same short fuse, but we can pull it together and we can make it work so that we can get out of here. And it felt very honest and realistic, as well as interesting. Like, why are you on such a short fuse? Why are you bitter about your life? Why are you bitter about your friend's life? And it's also not overwhelming. This is a story about a monster in the woods. This is not a story about people dealing with their psychological misgivings and their inadequacies while they're out in the woods and being hunted by something. This is a story about a monster in the woods that is hunting the prey. And you learn about the prey to make them more real and interesting, and to give them something to talk about during the day when they're in relative safety. Relative safety. But it is ultimately a monster story, which I love. I don't like it when there's a bait and switch of that kind, you know, and I was never a monster all along. It was the real monster is you. Although, that being said, I do love Frankenstein. But again, Frankenstein, the monsters were real. So, very similar to the other two books, we have characters who are hungry and thirsty in the woods. They're dealing with nature just as much as they're dealing with this monster. It kind of also reminds me of the movie The Edge. You ever seen the movie The Edge with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin? I thought that movie was really cool. So we have characters lost in the woods and they have to deal with the reality of their lives while they're trying to survive. It's the kind of thing that if they had just gone on a hike through the woods and just been able to get back without any issues, then everything that comes to light through their dealings in the woods, it would have remained hidden. In both the movie The Edge and the novel The Ritual, that stuff would have all stayed buried and never would have come up. But in this novel, this stuff bubbles to the surface. And I will not spoil the ending of the movie The Edge, but if you have seen the ending of the movie The Edge and if you have read The Ritual, I would love it if you would hop on Twitter and let me know what you think. What do you think Luke would have done if Luke had been in Anthony Hopkins' position that Anthony Hopkins was in at the end of the movie? And by that I mean he's asked a question. And if Luke was asked that same question, how would Luke have answered? And I feel like Luke would have answered the same way that Anthony Hopkins did. Another question is, what would Luke have done if he had actually left Dom behind? So Dominic somehow managed to be the only one left with Luke at the end of the book. Halfway through the book. And Luke is thinking, I should just leave him. But I can't. No, I'm going to do the right thing. What would have happened? What would have happened if Luke had left Dominic behind? My personal thought is if Luke would have left Dominic behind, the monster would have gone after Luke. Luke would have lost his integrity. It seems like the monster is getting guys at some kind of a... he's getting them in the order in which he is by... he's choosing that order. Excuse me. Having trouble forming my thoughts here, but he's getting them in the order that he is based on A, how vulnerable are you, and B, how little integrity do you have. And so the least vulnerable with the most integrity is getting chosen last. Just seems to be that's what's happening. So if Luke had abandoned his integrity and left Dominic behind, even with the good intention of just hunker down, hide in this cave, light a fire, whatever, I will be back for you as soon as possible. I think this is the only way we can both survive. I think that would have set the monster off to go get Luke. But shortly thereafter, the book does, of course, hit this abrupt 180-degree turn. And it's weird after that point. For a little while, and then there's a little bit of a payoff. And you know what? I think I already said that. So forgive me for having poorly edited notes here. One other thing I'll say about this is it reminds me a little bit of... A Song of Ice and Fire, only in the way that before I'd ever read a Game of Thrones, I asked somebody, I heard that this book, and this is exactly what I asked a friend of mine who had read them. I said, I heard that this book doesn't actually have any like supernatural elements in it. And I don't mean like ghosts and things. I mean, like it doesn't have any creatures that don't actually exist in our world. It doesn't have any monsters, magic, orcs, demons, spells, wizards, anything like that. And his description back to me was, you know what, it kind of doesn't, but there's hints of things. And I like that. It's not super saturated. It's not like if you were to write a Final Fantasy novel, every other character would have some form of magic skill that they can use. And that's fine for a video game, but it does make for a pretty weird, boring novel. Although I think the Witcher series probably did a pretty good job with that, although I've only read a few of the short stories. But that's a bit of an aside. With this, you have with the ritual, you have a supernatural story that does not drastically affect the human element of the story. You know, the human element of the story is still about survival. So I hope that makes sense. Ultimately, I did not care for the ruins. The girl who loved Tom Gordon was really cool. But the ritual, highly recommended if you like suspense, horror, wilderness survival, any of the above. Now, what are your, you know, some of your favorite, be interested to hear about it, some of your favorite wilderness survival. Go back and check out that best wilderness horror survival stories list from Goodreads. Love to see if there are any on those lists. Did you read The Willows? The Willows is on my list. I'd like to read that. And in any event, we should be resuming normal roundtable podcasts next month, knocking on wood, because that's, I think, a lot more fun. But in the interim, I apologize for the lateness of this particular episode. Typically, we talk about what we've been doing lately, so I will give you a little heads up on that. Of course, summer vacation being coming upon us shortly, spending a lot of time with the family at the pool, reading up on doing some Mary Roach, nonfiction for our next upcoming episode, and we'll be doing Flowers in the Attic shortly thereafter. Other than that, we're not really reading too much of anything, but I've been playing some old video games, playing Ocarina of Time, the Master Quest, never finished that one, and also Dragon Quarter. That's another one that I started years and years and years ago and never finished, playing it a bit lately. But in any event, thank you very much for joining, and I hope you have a great day.
A Novel Podcast is looking to produce more episodes, and we want you to join us. If you like reading novels and then talking about them, then you're a perfect candidate. We record remotely, so your location on Earth isn't a consideration, and no prior experience is necessary. Send us an email or a tweet, and let us know what books you'd like to discuss. A Novel Podcast at gmail.com or at A Novel Podcast. Look forward to hearing from you.